Milo's Pro Rewards members. Save big during Lowe's Pro Savings Days. Get your member volume discount plus an extra 5% off eligible orders with a quote of $2,000 or more. And buy more and save more with up to 20% off in-stock molding when you spend $250 or more. Members get more at Lowe's. Valid through 7/31. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Can't be combined with any contract or special pricing. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit the Pro Desk or Lowe's.com/terms for more details. Subject to change.
Babe, did you see that Moto Casino is giving a $1,776,000 worth of prizes?
That's why they're called America's Social Casino, celebrating the birth of America bigger than anyone else.
You can win incredible experiences at NASCAR and F1 races and a grand prize of 1 million sweeps coins.
So what are you waiting for? Spin now on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needing something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide-leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
This is Hidden Killers Half Year in Review. A look back at some of the most compelling cases of 2026 so far. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Victoria Huerman was 13 years old the last time her father killed. She grew up playing video games 10 feet from the room where women were allegedly murdered and dismembered. I guess it's not allegedly anymore. When Rex confessed to her privately, she asked him a question that no child really should ever have to ask a parent, and got an answer that will follow her for the rest of her life. The documentary captured a young woman trying to hold two truths that shouldn't be able to exist in the same person. Siobhan Scott is with myself and Robin Drake as we continue to break down chapter 4 here in the new Gilgo Beach doc, or the fourth part of the Gilgo Beach doc, the Gilgo Beach Killer House of Secrets, available on Peacock right now. Victoria said something in the documentary that really hit hard. She said nobody really thinks about the daughter of this serial killer. She's dealing with depression, anger, her self-worth is destroyed. She's questioning why she's even here. What is the actual psychological weight of finding out your identity is now permanently tied to a parent's crimes? We've seen this in other cases. We've seen it with BTK and many others. And everyone handles it a little bit differently. Some use it as a way to outreach and help other victims of trauma and abuse. Some fall into, addiction and depression and bad things. What's your take on Victoria and how she's processing all this?
My heart really went out to her.
Oh my God.
I mean, she is, I think, a well-meaning person. And it's just got to shatter your identity to know that the person that raised you, that you had a certain belief about, is a monster, and mm-hmm. her father is a monster. So I would expect the depression. I would expect the shattered self. Who am I? And again, she's going to have to recreate her identity. And I saw a lot of struggling with that. One of the things that she said that really concerned me, and this would be a place I would want to speak with her more about, was the I forgive him. You know, when they mm-hmm. said, do you forgive him? And she said, yes, because I don't want to carry the burden of whatever, however she put it, that it would be a burden to her not to forgive him. That really struck me as quick forgiveness. And that can be a trauma response, because again, we're talking about sadism. Personally, I don't forgive sadists.
Yeah.
You know, wouldn't matter who it was.
The only people that want you to are those nutters from IBLP.
The umbrellas, yes.
Yeah, you know, I mean, yeah. I mean, there's evil. This guy was pure evil. He got pure enjoyment out of torturing others. Yeah. He doesn't deserve forgiveness, and you're not a bad person for not forgiving him.
100%. 100%.
What kind of potholes or red flags you think others should be looking out for from her as she's moving through her recovery process that could be stumbling blocks for her? Like, what's the first one or two you think will be hard for her to move through that might pop up that others can notice?
Well, I think the depression is, she's going to need a lot of help with that. And looking through the secondary trauma, because she is a victim too in this. Mm-hmm. And all the things that she's had to listen to and learn, that's going to cause secondary PTSD for her. And that includes reliving the episodes, worried about how other people perceive her all the time. And it's going to affect the trajectory of her life. Now, that doesn't mean it has to ruin her life, but it's going to be a harder life than it would have been. And I loved earlier in the episode where she was visited by Carrie Rossum. Am I getting her name right?
Yeah.
Who has really, really worked on her own healing and now helps other people.
Yeah,
and I think that's a great way to go is, you know, take what's happened to you, heal what you can from your trauma, and then help other survivors. I think that would be a wonderful way to go. But Victoria has got to just be devastated. And this is fairly early into the whole thing. But yeah, forgiving him, this cultural myth about, oh, well, if I don't forgive, then I'm carrying the burden. I call BS on that.
Yep.
I call
Cut
BS.
Cut nutters out, man.
Yeah. 1,000%.
Yeah.
I mean, the two of them, Victoria and Asa, seem to have, and this was evident in the first part of the doc, the first three parts, that was years ago. Victoria was very much on the page early on that, yeah, he probably did this. Mm-hmm. Now it's a cold, hard truth, so it hits even harder. Asa was not on that page. She now clearly is, but still, the dynamic of still wanting to be close to him, the dynamic really hasn't changed all that much in terms of the desire of either of them wanting to have some sort of relationship with Rex. How much, and healing obviously is a very personal journey for every person here, whether it's daughter, mother, but sometimes helping each other, having gone through a shared experience, trauma bonded. How much do Victoria and Asa need each other on their healing journey, if you will, especially if both of them are viewing Rex in very different lights? Do they not need each other? Would it be better if they did this journey separately rather than sharing notes?
I think the second is true, that Victoria is, I think, a healthier person than Asa, which is why she was open to the possibility from the beginning that this could be true. And Asa is in a still very much of an enmeshed emotional relationship with Rex. And so having them do their work separately, I think there was a place to do it together as a family. And maybe that would happen every so often where they get together with the therapist and talk about that. But Victoria, I think, will probably be more able to rapidly move forward and develop her own identity. She's at the phase of life we talk about individuation, which is developing, you know, who you are from apart from who your parents are. And I think she has the capacity to go on and have a good life. And so having more separation from Asa's reality is probably good.
Yeah, that's why curiosity on that one, just because I was thinking exactly the same thing Tony was, and that is, can she keep healing at any rate if she's still living in that house where her mom is living in the bedroom where the horrendous things happened? Or does she really need to disconnect from her mother as well? Or can she disconnect from Rex but still maintain connection with her mother, who doesn't seem to be able to move on.
Yeah, I would say definitely getting out of that house. I would like to see that house torn down.
Yeah,
and, you know, I mean, I can't imagine being the neighbors. Can you imagine being the construction guys that went in to work on that basement? I mean, you know, that was the first place mine went. Would I want to be in there removing that drywall and putting in a new ceiling? It's like, this is just, it's a place that needs to go. And I think the more separation Victoria can have, it doesn't mean never speaking to her mother again, but just separating their emotional journey, because they're in very different places.
I'd imagine the physical proximity of it also has a massive impact also. I mean, you're reminded every single day of what your father did right there where you played your computer games, and also the creepiness of it too. It's where he grew up. It's the same bedroom. I mean, it's mind-bending to really think about what Victoria, the fact that she is having these healthy responses at all is actually pretty remarkable. Mm-hmm. Because that's a lot, because you have a mother that is obviously trauma bonded to him, and then a father who just was putting on a show her entire life. I mean, just and she said how bone crushing it was. That's her daddy, you know, in her mind, mm-hmm. you know, the protector of her, of everything in her life. And to come to find out, because she even said, did you think of me when mm-hmm. you're doing these things to these girls?
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah. And he did not. And that room, the room holds incredible symbolism and power, because the room was where he was enacting his fantasies as a child, because I think he said he started having these fantasies late teens. It's usually earlier than that. Mm-hmm. And so the room was part of the ritual. So, you know, if a place can be evil, that would be an evil place.
Does it make it better for Victoria, that is answer to the question of what are you thinking of? Are you thinking of me when you're doing this? Are you thinking of not? And I know she's meaning it not necessarily in the way of like, are you killing her and thinking of me? It's, are you considering these people in your life and the consequences to these actions if you were to be caught? And his answer is a resounding no. Mm-hmm. What does that mean to Victoria? Is it better that his answer is no, and that he's not remotely considering this, and he's completely splitting his personality off, and he's living in a different world and a different reality that's all his? Or is it better if he were to say, I considered that, but I thought, you know, I got a good track record and I know I can hide this. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's any good answer to that question, mm-hmm. but I mean, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, probably no good answer, but yeah. I think it was a good question for her, because that's one of the cruel aspects of this, which again, we can say, you know, we don't have to interview him to say psychopath here, mm-hmm. and no empathy for his wife or for his kids, no empathy for Victoria. And that was probably helpful for her to hear. No, I was not thinking about you.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be kind of horror, like, oh yeah, and I was thinking about what we go to the Chuck E. Cheese after. You know, that would be even more horrifying. Mm-hmm. One of the things that she talked about in there, and I think this is applicable to almost anyone who's had some sort of childhood trauma that is revealed later in life, because it wasn't like Victoria was down there watching him chop up people while she's watching the Disney Channel.
Scooby-Doo.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was, they were very separate, but I guess more so speaking to someone who, I guess, I don't even know what you'd call it, where you discover that there's so many things in your childhood that were not what they appeared to be. I'm sure there's a word for it, Siobhan. But that's what she's going through. And a lot of people end up having those sort of revelations later in life, not always to this sort of extent, but still traumatic nonetheless, where you look back at your palette of life and things that happened. And for the longest time, when you're thinking about that video game, that TV show, that book that you read in that basement where you had, you know, summers where it was a little bit cooler down there because it's hot upstairs, and it's just, it's a happy place. It's not what it turned out to actually be. Every time you get those memories, you're then triggered back into, oh, that was happy, but my dad was murdering people right over there. Mm-hmm. It taints every damn thing, and it makes it so difficult then to escape that memory. And because you don't even have to be talking about your dad anymore to then have to be brought back into that world, because so many things in your world are tainted by him that were all indirectly done. How does someone carry the good parts of those memories, the pure parts of the memories of watching the Disney afternoon in the basement or whatever, mm-hmm. and reconcile it and be okay with it and not have to be triggered by it every damn time they think about just normal aspects of life that will come up in any way, shape, or form as they go about their days?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no good, easy way to do it, yeah. because that's where it affects your identity, because it's all those childhood memories yeah. that make your identity and yeah. make mm-hmm. you who you are.
It's part of the life arc.
Yeah. And that, I think, is the most damaging thing of all this, is your childhood has now been rewritten. Right? Mm-hmm. It's been damaged. You have been damaged. And it's a lot of work to be able to rebuild yourself and reauthor your life. And that's really what's, you know, going to be her work for the rest of her life.
Yeah, Siobhan, with that, I mean, I talk about this all the time when we're trying to predict behaviors of others and understand what makes them do the things they do in life. I talk about that life arc, that spark and inspiration during those formative years of life that we follow the rest of our lives, because those events and things and people gave us a sense of safety, security, that we always want to follow those things that gave us that for the rest of our lives. And it becomes very predictable. So when those things that you thought gave you that sense of safety at that early age get ripped away in a blink of an eye, as a therapist, what do you do? Do you help them hold on to the emotions you had at the time, irrespective of the events that are now come to light? Or do you try to superimpose something else in there? Or do you help them? What do you do in those moments when what formed you and forged you into who you are and the belief system and the morals and ethics you thought you got from that time period in life are totally ripped and told is actually not what it is? What do you replace it with, or don't you replace it?
It's a hard one, you know, because there's no formula, but I think people do compartmentalize to some degree that, yes, there were good times that I got with this man but never lose the fact that, yes, he is a sadistic killer. So it's hard work to do. And you sort of have to hold on to the good bits that you can hold on to, but never lose the other reality. And then the other thing that occurred to me that could be very healing for her is if people can find mentors or, in essence, surrogate parents who are wonderful, good, right. solid people that step into their lives and can sort of take over that role. And I see that a lot with people who've had childhood trauma. They may be in their 30s now. They don't have good memories of childhood, but they develop friendships with people who are a decade or two older, who right. can kind of fill that spot in their heart for them. And that can be really good.
So is it okay for her to hold on to the memory of her father as who he was in her mind? Or does she need to erase that?
It's probably impossible to completely erase it, and everybody's going to have different abilities to do that. I have seen some people, let's say, I'm thinking of a case where father was a pedophile, and the kids found out in their teenage years, and they erased him. They erased all memory. I mean, obviously, they could have good memories, but they chose not to go there and not mm-hmm. to focus on them.
Is there a better or worse to that? Is there a right or wrong? Or is it just always dependent on the individual, as in most cases?
Yeah, I think it has to be individualized. I try to support as much as I can people's path, you know, because we've right. all got different brains. We integrated things differently. And people are pretty reticent to a therapist coming in and say, now here's the formula. You've got to do this and do that. I mean, it'd be lovely if there were a template, right?
Right.
But you sort of have to be the companion and walk people through whatever is going to get them to the healthiest place that you can.
Do all paths lead to healthy if they're able to work through it?
We'd love to see
good outcomes. I'm sorry, Rob, I'm pounding you with these questions.
No, they're great. They're great questions, right? I can tell your behavioral science knowledge for both of you. You're very knowledgeable people, so the questions are good. That's why I love this show. But yeah, it's something that I would say is very different depending on the person's capacity, and some people end up really with very, you know, I don't always like the word healthy because none of us are ever perfectly there, right? We're always on the path. We're always working towards it.
A journey, not a destination.
Exactly. But some people end up very functional and other people descend into addiction and, you know, just do not really recover. So
Thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube on Victoria's journey. It's very fascinating. And I wish the best for her on that journey, wherever it takes her. Links are in the description. Siobhan's book, Nightbird, available wherever you get books. Go and check it out.
And give it as a gift, too, for someone that might have gone through something or gone through something. I think it's a great gift for others as well. It's very enlightening.
There's a lot of trauma in it and a lot of healing from trauma, which is the important point.
It is. Your thoughts in the comment section, Substack and YouTube. We'll continue that conversation right there.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
The Peacock documentary about Rex Heerman, the Gilgo Beach killer, House of Secrets, did something no courtroom ever would have. It put a therapist in a room with Rex Heerman and let her dig. What came out of those sessions is a portrait of a man who's timed his body dumps with a stopwatch. Literally, who built a four-day ritual around each killing and who says he still can't connect the person in the crime scene photos to himself. Rex Heerman told the world who he is. The question is whether any of us are really hearing it. We heard his voice in the doc in part four. We even heard it in the earlier parts too. He calls Asa, he calls Victoria several times during the new episode in the docuseries, and it usually starts with, "Hello, dear." Very folksy, very like nothing's going on. How you doing? How's prison? Well, you know, we did this today. We did that today. Not really, you know, it's not the, you know, the scary evil monster where it's like, oh, Rex is on the phone.
Hello, Satan is here.
You know, that's not how it goes. It's hello, it dear. Siobhan, is Rex still trying to control the narrative here? Is he still trying to control Asa and the people in his life and what they view him as, how they view him? And is he even conscious that he's doing it, if that's what's going on?
I think he's conscious of doing it. And yes, he's very much, I mean, he can play Asa. He knows what to say. And that, hello, dear, always creeped me out.
Oh,
that,
my God.
That just made my skin crawl.
Yeah.
Beyond, I think, any of us to be able to understand how to get into a mind like that. I loved what the therapist said in the beginning, where he said something like, "Have you ever met a serial killer before?" or something.
Yeah.
And she said, "You're not special. You're not
perfect
special."
Perfect thing to say to a grandiose psychopath.
Yes.
Siobhan, so I'm curious your thoughts on this. I have mine. He spent his entire lifetime reveling in sadomasochism, totally abusing women, totally controlling them, having his playtime. Do you think he was doing exactly the same thing when he was confessing to Asa and Victoria? He did it for his pure jollies to watch their reaction to what he was saying.
That's sure possible. It's sure possible because a person like that is shameless. So he played the game for a long time. He got away with it. He was probably, as serial killers do, very proud of himself for getting away with it. And he likes the fact that he can control the narrative. So, yeah.
And watching the shock on faces. And I think he's probably disappointed with Asa, maybe not so Victoria. But it was kind of interesting that he was as transparent as they wanted him to be, because I think he took a lot of pleasure in it. I really do. Mm-hmm. I think that's mm-hmm. him just trying to control everything.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, and this kind of goes back to what we were talking about Asa in our first segment. And if you haven't watched it, go back and check that out. Asa entertaining him, Asa giving him a platform, meaning her ear. The platform is just simply him speaking, her listening. Nobody else. The cameras are away. Just the two of them. The fact that she goes and listens to him on the phone calls, visits him, basically, it feeds him. It mm-hmm. feeds his ability to share these stories. And now he wants to share the stories. He was convicted on 7 counts. He admitted to 8. Because it was like, well, basically I'm going down. It's almost like, well, I'll add another story in here.
I wonder if that was a mistake on his part or not.
I don't know. Or was it like, well, I'm going down. I want to share everything, because he's getting something out of telling these stories now. He knows the jig's up. But now how does he get his joy? He gets the joy reliving it, sharing mm-hmm. the memories. And I think there might be more too in states that have the death penalty.
Yep.
That
he doesn't want attention to. I'm with you on that, Tony. I'm so with you.
I think that's where that is, but the 8 that he admitted to, I think it's one move and one move only, so he can openly talk about it and in his world relive the magic.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Play time. Now he can't have the physical play time with the bodies. He's gonna have play time with his daughter and his wife's mind.
So you have two things going on simultaneously. You have a monster being fed his kibble, and you also have a woman, a victim of him, trying to find healing through these conversations. One is a much more innocent and righteous process of the victim trying to find healing. And if she's finding that, we can argue the healthiness of it, of going and having this revelation in these conversations with Rex for her own healing. But again, at the same time, you're feeding that beast. Mm-hmm. Does somebody need to get in there and show Asa that that's not a good thing to do, to continue mm-hmm. to feed the beast? Or is that not for anybody to say? Because it again, it's her own personal journey there for her own healing. And again, who are we to say? If this is benefiting you, then that is for you, because you are a victim too. But the only way it seems for her to kind of get to some of these places is by feeding the beast. It's a catch-22.
Yeah, it is. And as I always say, everybody's got their own path. I try to be their companion in the journey, but not judge it. But I saw one of the comments, I would change my name and leave the country. And I think that would be, I would celebrate that. I think that would be a marvelous choice. No more hello, dear phone calls. It's, you know, it's like leave the monster behind and move on.
Can you mm-hmm. be healed by talking to a psychopath? I mean, he's not going to give you what you need. I mean, I'm with you on all these things, Siobhan. I know we talked about it yesterday on a show with Bob, and that is, some people have a heart. No, I think it's Monday when I was talking with Tony. You know, people, in kind of to this, you know, like you have to forgive, you know, in order to heal or something. No, you don't. Not when you're dealing with this kind of thing. And also, you don't have to stay with people, even if they're family. If they're just unhealthy Fs like this, what are you doing? Leave. Mm-hmm. Cut them out. I don't know how. I don't know how you can talk to someone with zero empathy and heal. I can't, because they're not giving you anything you need. You need an empathetic person to heal.
Is she doing that in a way to have him basically fill her bucket of information on Rex to the point where it's overflowing and she has to walk away? Is she trying to be pushed away by him by exposing herself to him? Because just sitting with the Rex that she remembers, she's never going to get there. Does she need this exposure to the monster version of Rex to truly find the healing, to push whatever is deep and so ingrained in her that is connected to him away? Does she need to get close to break away?
I can see conversation or two about tell me the truth of what you did, because she kept saying, I need to hear it from him. okay, hear it from him. You've heard it from him. Now be done. Now detach. Now develop your own perceptions of the world, your own sense of identity. I think when we look at what would ideally healing look like, that would be what I would think would be the healthier thing to do.
Yeah, because I mean, I'm just listening to her and how she describes it and how she's bifurcated him for him. She's rationalized for him that, hey, that's just the monster you, and I know you as the family man. So I don't think that monster bucket side is ever going to get full enough. She'll just think, oh, that was the monster. She's rational. I mean, she's dug herself such a perfect bifurcation of who he is that she'll always say, well, I'm just talking to Rex, the family man. That's the monster over there. And in other words, that bucket can't get too full for her to cut off who she thinks she loves.
It's constantly got a hole in it, so it never
gets
filled.
Yeah, it does. It's a bucket that will never be filled for her, because or at least full enough that it will say, I don't think she'll ever accept him. This is one person, not two. This is one.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Completely. I agree.
Which is probably also why she never saw it to begin with, because the bucket's always had a hole. And it never, for others, you know, depending on who they are, you know, it would have overflowed at some point and questions would have been asked. Mm-hmm. But because it was always low, the levels, because it's got a big leak in it and she's okay with it, it never overflowed. And I'm not saying that she's hiding anything or that she consciously was trying to withhold anything or not know anything, but I would imagine, do you think, Siobhan, she's looking back on the last 30 some years of her life going, oh, I wonder if that was this. Nothing specific, but just little moments here and there where she thought nothing of them at the moment, but maybe in the context now, that something she thought really meant something else.
It would be a good thing if she were able to look back honestly and try to put the pieces together. And then, as you say, stop with the separation of, well, there was the good him and the bad him. In truth, the bad him was always there. It was always operating in the background. She didn't know about it. So I can see a place for a little bit of that, but it would be interesting 5 years down the road to have another documentary about, has she evolved? Has she changed? Is she still taking those hello, dear phone calls?
Mm-hmm. Do you think, another angle on this, I'm curious whether this would be effective therapy if anyone's ever done it this way, and that is, instead of trying to have her face and understand who Rex is, would it be helpful just, let's just ignore Rex and what she's doing there? What if we educated her on what psychopathy looks like? You know, and kind of, and so she can kind of hope maybe at some point come to her own conclusion where she starts connecting the dots. Because, I mean, if she's curious about human beings and how they work and she has a deeper understanding of serial killers and psychopathy, you know, maybe she, again, I guess it depends on her level of curiosity. I don't think she's got any going.
And capability of understanding it.
Yeah,
right. You know. It would be wonderful if I were her therapist, I would certainly be doing that. That would have been one of the earliest things, is let me explain the mind of a psychopath. Let me explain the mind of a sadist. Right. Let me explain how this works. And again, you're right. Does she have the capacity to integrate that and to make sense of it and listen to it?
What do you make of the fact that it was his childhood bedroom that he's doing these horrible things in? I mean, it's interesting. I mean, there are some parallels here with BTK. BTK wasn't doing these things in the home, but he lived in his childhood home. It's an interesting parallel there. He would go back and his family was none the wiser. But Rex is going back to his own childhood home, his own childhood bedroom in the basement and doing these horrible things. What's the significance of that?
I think it's really significant. That shows where these fantasies originated, where he started creating this movie in his mind of what he wanted to do to women, and probably started very young. The bedroom is part of the ritual, and it's another one of these tremendously creepy things about this behavior. That bedroom is hell. I mean, hell happened in that room.
And he's controlled his environment his entire life because it's been his entire life. Unbelievable.
I mean, he used such, I mean, crass terms in the context, playtime, cleanup time. I mean, it almost sounds like, you know, preschool. Okay, it's cleanup time. Mm-hmm. It's time to put away our toys, like the good girls and boys do. I mean, it's very, very childlike in some of the ways. Yeah, in the ways that he described these sort of things going on in this capacity. Do you, when you have this sort of splitting of this personality here, you got the family man, you got this, and yes, the evil one is the one all around. He's so bad that he's able to live a fake life with this family and bamboozle them for all those years and feel no guilt. That's just how damn evil this guy is. Mm-hmm. The fact that he was doing these horrific things in his home over and over and over and over and over and over, in that, does that mind when he's having his 4-day playtime? Is he ever considering getting caught, or is it worth it to him? Is I'm willing to go down for this because I need this so badly. Is it such an urge that something in him has that there's no, like, water, you need it to survive. Was doing these sort of things that innate of a need to him that there was just no stopping it?
Mm-hmm. I do think they're like an addict in that sense. They think mm-hmm. about it all the time. They have a sense of being out of control. They, even if they think, well, maybe I'll get caught someday, you know, maybe I should stop, but I'm not going to stop. But then there's that grandiose piece with all his meticulous planning. These folks tend to be, in addition to psychopathic and sadistic, they tend to be narcissistic and think that they can outsmart everyone. And that's part of the game for them, is outsmarting everyone. So he was willing to take the risk of potentially getting caught. But I think probably in his mind, he didn't think he would. He thought he would get away with it, especially because he did for so many years.
Yeah, he had a lot of reps in doing it. And I think he made his plan B and C too, you know, and he said this, I kind of half believed him, you know, making his manual up so he wouldn't have to do it anymore. No, I thought that was part of plan B, because a large reason why serial killers do what they do is the fantasy aspect of the things they're doing, the buildup, the anticipation. Mm-hmm. And so even if he's unable to do it for a period of time, just like Dennis Rader did, you can fantasize and substitute it with other things. So he can actually work on his manual, think about his manual. So even behind bars, he's able to do the same stuff because... Right. It's and then what can he do? He can play with people by revealing to them all the horrendous things I did and watch the impact of him, the horror in their eyes, like he did to his wife and daughter, and which he'll probably do again when he's talking to BAU. Yeah. I think that's exactly what he's going to do. And then as he gets a little bored and people get bored with him, we might start learning about other things. He'll start dribbling out like Dennis Rader did. Oh, I got a little bit of here, a little bit of there. Oh, did I say 8? Oh, maybe it was 9. 10. Oh, did you look down in South Carolina, North Carolina? I see what I mean. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He's gonna keep playing with everyone till the day he dies.
Do you think there's more, Siobhan, other than the 8, especially the South Carolina, where there is the death penalty and they use it?
I would sure bet so. I think that would definitely fit. And the other thing that comes to mind is, by telling these stories, he makes the families suffer, and these guys get pleasure from that. One of the people who owned that was the Parkland school shooter, who said very openly in some of his writings and some of the conversations when they were saying, oh, well, maybe he'll feel guilty during the trial, you know, watching the families suffer. He said, I like to see the families suffer. So
he's going to revel in the victim impact statements unless they get up there and do what
Koberger's.
Yeah, you know it. You know what I'm talking about. Olivia.
Gonsalves.
Yep. And eviscerate him as only you can, a psychopath.
Yeah.
And assault his insignificance, assault the manhood, and assault, you know, the nothing he is in the world and how the world will just forget about him. Mm-hmm. Other than that, he's going to revel in their victim statements. So I hope 100%. They don't give him anything. I hope they don't give him anything to relish.
Yeah. Yeah. that's a myth we have to bust as well, that victim impact statements for a true sadistic psychopath, that hurts them. It doesn't hurt them.
They love it.
They love it.
Mm-hmm. It's a treat. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's the cake at the end of the party.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's messed up. Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, as always, thank you so much. Her great latest chat. Book, Nightbird, it is available wherever you get books. Highly suggest
award-winning Nightbird.
And award-winning, yes, as well. Robin Drake, It's All Not All About Me. It's available also wherever you get books. Go and check them
Not award-winning.
Yet.
Yeah,
sold a lot of copies. I sold a lot of copies, but other than that,
that is awesome. Yeah, go check them both out. And your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. We will continue our conversation there. Press subscribe wherever you're getting podcasts or watching us, so you don't miss any of our conversations. Like I said, we'll continue it in the comments. Until next time, for Siobhan, for Todd, for Robert, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spend on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spend on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needing something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Moto Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino. Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spend on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino.
Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.